The short story, The Burmans. Are my son and his wife going to be safe in this neighborhood? It was Mrs. Sharon Berman, and she was touring the neighborhood with her son Ari and daughter-in-law Sarah. It was a question I now regret having answered. It's a tough neighborhood in many ways. You just have to be careful. It can be a wonderful place to live as well, but you have to understand that it's a changing neighborhood, and I think it's changing for the better. I was then reminded of the sales pitch we received when we first came here. Since then, we had become corridor converts, and we were usually zealous in our attempts to encourage others to experience what we had discovered. This couple, however, had no idea what the corridor had in store for them. I could have told them about the guy at the pump-your-own-gas station who threatened to kill me because I didn't want to share in the joy of his recent conversion to Christianity. He wanted me to be born again as well, and when I refused, he decided my death was the only alternative. Then, when he attempted to get into my car and enlighten Maggie, I grabbed him by the back of his neck and threw him against the gas pump. I then declared that I didn't have time to be saved or killed right then. But if he was committed to one or the other, he could do it another time.
Look, I don't have time for you to kill me now, but I'll be at home at 8 o'clock tonight and you can kill me then. I knew then and there the corridor was indeed changing me. I was truly beginning to think differently. My assailant just shouted some obscenity at me and went on his way. Just another day in the neighborhood. By the way, he didn't show up for my appointment that night, but he very well could have. Anything could happen in the corridor.
I also could have told the Bermans about the time Maggie and I found Morris Crispin's beaten and bloodied, but I didn't. Morris, as you know by now, was a longtime resident and advocate of the corridor. After all, it was Morris who proudly displayed his depressed skull to me as a badge of survival. Morris always felt that he had the upper hand, even though he had the scars to show that his longtime residency hadn't been easy. This all changed one hot summer night in August. When it's hot, it is always hotter in the city. The luxury of modern air conditioning was indeed a luxury that most of our neighbors couldn't afford. An open window and an occasional breeze was the best they could hope for. Morris often left his lights on all night, as well as his second-floor windows, wide open. He loved the city at night, but then he had lived here for a long time. He was usually cautious, but he felt comfortable and believed that he, of all people, was safe. Nothing really bad would happen to him. But it did, that August night, when someone scaled over the back wall of his building and into his apartment. He was a thief, but came armed with a steel crowbar. Morris attempted to defend himself against a man slightly larger than him, but he was startled and he had no time to get his own weapon. Morris was bleeding badly from the blows his assailant was landing on him, and he ultimately realized that he was going to die. It was then that he begged for his life. "Take my money, please. Please don't kill me. Please. I'm begging you." The man stopped beating him. "Give me all your fucking money or I will kill you," he shouted. Morris complied. "Don't call the police or I'll come back and kill your ass for sure. Do you hear me?" Morris survived and his physical wounds healed, but he had met his match. His worst nightmare had come true. After that night, Morris seemed to change. He knew he too was vulnerable. He too could become one of Detroit's statistics. He too was afraid. After that night, the lights remained on, but his windows were closed forever. I guess I didn't tell the Bermans about Morris's brush with death because it was something Morris didn't want talked about. He was embarrassed and reluctant to admit that he too could fall prey. He felt violated, didn't want anyone else to know that he was forced to beg for his life. The Burmans eventually moved into Enos Brown's apartment building. It was a beautifully restored 5-story Art Deco building located down the alley from our ice cream store and across the street from the 13th Precinct Police Headquarters. On the surface, it seemed like a safe enough place. Ari Berman was a professor of anthropology at Wayne State, and his wife Sarah was a law student at Detroit College of Law. He was a New Yorker, and she was from Los Angeles. It's trite to say, but they were sweet, wonderful people and seemed truly made for each other. The early months in the corridor were happy times, made even happier with the news of Sarah's pregnancy. They often came to our ice cream store when Sarah craved something sweet. You could see the love in Ari's eyes when Sarah spoke of the child they would soon have together. The neighborhood shared in their joy. It was a good feeling to have a new family, to have a new baby in the corridor. It was good. When the baby came, everyone shared in the joy it brought. A baby girl named Emily. To the delight of everyone, they brought her to the ice cream store often, for Sarah's craving of sweets didn't seem to end. It was a good time, a time that almost made us forget about the corridor, a time that made us believe that people do live in the Cass Corridor. Things were changing. Things were changing. But the corridor was still the corridor, and we would soon be reminded of that.
On Sunday evenings, Ari often worked late in his university office, preparing for his Monday classes. It was one such snowy night in December that would abruptly startle us from our wonderful dream.
Had Ari failed to become streetwise? Had he become complacent and overly confident about his new neighborhood? I don't know. But that night, 3 men confronted him in the alley near our ice cream store, near a place where there had been so much joy. Was it a robbery or a hate crime? We'll never know for sure. But Ari died there in the snow. They now had his wallet, which contained his identification and his address. They also had the keys to their apartment. The results even horrified hardened Detroit cops. The corridor's hope for the future had been brutally murdered. 2 wonderful people and an innocent child, and with them the idealism we had all shared, all died that night in the corridor.